Good evening. Governor Cuomo gets a Christmas present. The GOP eats its own. And Yemeni Americans speak out against a proposed Biden pick for Secretary of Defense. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo for the WBAI News for Thursday, December 3rd, 2020. A Chinese spacecraft named after the lunar goddess lifted off Thursday night with a load of moon rocks on the first stage of its return to Earth. It's the third Chinese spacecraft to reach the moon and the first to take off again. The Chang'e 5 would be the first spacecraft to return samples of the moon since unmanned Soviet and crewed U.S. landings brought back hundreds of pounds half a century ago. The Ascent module will dock with a return craft, bringing the precious sample back to Earth in about a month. Right before the ascent, the lander unfurled what was called the first freestanding Chinese flag on the moon.
Sudan says Ethiopian forces are blocking refugees from crossing into Sudan. They're fleeing the country's embattled Tigray region. More than 45,000 Ethiopians have fled into the remote area of Sudan. The UN says nearly half the refugees are children.
And the United Nations Humanitarian Office says the number killed in the war in Yemen has reached 233,000. That's not too far, right across the Red Sea from the war fighting in Ethiopia. Most of the deaths in Yemen have occurred from what the world body calls indirect causes. Hostilities have caused tens of thousands of civilian deaths. And according to the UN, there have been artillery shelling of residential areas and other senseless attacks. About 6,000 children have been killed. Yemen's civil war began in earnest in 2015. In a poor country, the conflict brought hunger, disease, economic collapse, destroying over $200 million in crops. But what has Yemenis in the United States most worried is the possibility President-elect Biden might appoint Michelle Flournoy as Secretary of Defense. She's been working for defense contractors in the so-called revolving door between Pentagon and military contractors and is a strong advocate for Saudi Arabia. A spokesperson for the Yemeni Alliance Committee is Koser. She spoke with WBAI.
For Yemeni Alliance Committee, when we heard the news of the possibility of her becoming the new defense secretary, it was very alarming, disturbing to say the least. She's very problematic. She has a history of hawkish interventionism inside the Middle East, specifically to Yemen. She's been very, very supportive of the arms sales that the Saudis are being used to bomb Yemen. So that was very disturbing.
Was there any daylight, any difference between Michelle Flournoy's position on Yemen and what you saw in the Trump administration?
To be frank, no, honestly. Surprisingly, she supports the same thing that Trump did, and some of the stances that she has go against what Biden has promised. For example, for the support for Yemen ending arms sales, he has pledged to end the war in Yemen and in support for the Saudis, and she has supported the opposite and is actually like lobbying for Raytheon in the background. So that was, I guess, surprising.
What's happening in Yemen right now?
So Yemen right now is on the verge of famine. It's being pushed to famine with COVID. The aid was underfunded under the Trump administration. People are dying, whether it's by bombs, whether it's starvation, the blockade that is starving the nation. And the latest hit, which is labeling the Houthis a terrorist organization, which really undermines humanitarian orgs from going into Yemen and helping in areas under Houthi control. So that really has an effect on the civilian population rather than the leaders.
So a whole nation is being blockaded. Its port is being blockaded. Food and basic materials are being blockaded.
Yes.
And who's behind this blockade?
Yes, the Saudis are behind the naval, air, and land blockade.
And what role has the United States up till now played in that?
It supports, it has given the green light to the Saudis to do whatever they want inside of Yemen. It supports them logistically with intelligence. It refuels their jets mid-air and provides intelligence to the Saudi inside of Saudi Arabia. So it is, the United States is very complicit in the genocide inside of Yemen.
And you expect any change from the Democratic nominee if he appoints a Secretary of Defense, somebody like Michelle Flournoy?
No, I don't expect any change if she does gets the position or is elected. I don't expect any change. It's just a continuation of what's been happening. We were hoping for a more progressive pick, an anti-war stand pick, because this war, she's not working for the American people. She's working for Raytheon and military contractors.
Anything you'd like to add that we should know?
We have on January 25th, we have a global day of action for Yemen. Over 160 organizations from over 15 countries have signed on to the joining statement. It is to pressure. We have demands in the first 100 days of his presidency. Joe Biden needs to restore all aid to Yemen, stop arms sales to Saudi Arabia and the UAE, and stop all U.S. involvement in the war in Yemen. And we really, really hope that people can join in on this action.
COSAIR is a spokesperson for the Yemeni Alliance Committee. Meanwhile, lawmakers in the United States may vote as soon as next week on resolutions seeking to block Trump's $23 billion weapons sale to the United Arab Emirates, another country at war with Yemen. The sale includes products from privately held General Atomics, Lockheed Martin Corp., F-35s, and missiles made by Raytheon, a company that's used Michel Flournoy as a lobbyist. On the Republican side, President Trump has been having a busy week spinning his losses as he makes a desperate attempt to hold on to his presidency.
The GOP-dominated Wisconsin Supreme Court refused to hear President Donald Trump's lawsuit attempting to overturn his loss to Joe Biden in the battleground state. The legal defeat on a 4-3 ruling was the latest in a string of losses for Trump's post-election lawsuits. Trump asked the Wisconsin Supreme Court to disqualify more than 221,000 ballots in the state's two biggest Democratic counties. Earlier lawsuits were rejected after recounts failed to turn up more than a handful of votes, most of those going to Biden. Two more suits are pending in Wisconsin and a federal suit filed by conspiracy lawyer Sidney Powell, who has been removed from the Trump legal team. Both Powell and Lynn Wood, another Trump lawyer, have come under attack by Trump and other Republicans for their call to boycott the Georgia Senate runoff. Meanwhile, Arizona Governor Doug Ducey said Wednesday that it was President Donald Trump on the phone when he silenced a call from the White House while in the middle of signing papers certifying election results showing Trump narrowly lost the state. Ducey had bragged he gets so many calls from Trump, he gave the president his own ringtone, "Hail to the Chief." The call was picked up by an open mic as Ducey signed the certification of Joe Biden's win in Arizona. Ducey said he returned the call after the event, but repeatedly declined to talk about his discussion with the president. And on Tuesday, Attorney General Bill Barr, also a Trump supporter, declared the Department of Justice uncovered no evidence of widespread voter fraud, contradicting his boss. Barr later spent 2.5 hours in a White House meeting with Trump. The meeting was described as intense. Afterwards, the DOJ amended Barr's declaration, saying the federal investigation into fraud has not been concluded. Trump had this to say about Barr's statement earlier today.
Well, he hasn't done anything, so he hasn't looked. When he looks, he'll see the kind of evidence that right now you're seeing in the Georgia Senate. You know, they're going through hearings right now in Georgia, and they're finding tremendous volumes, so they haven't looked very hard.
Reportedly, Trump has floated the idea of firing Barr. The president, angered by Attorney General Jeff Sessions' recusal from the Russia investigation, forced his resignation in 2018. In 2017, Trump fired FBI Director Jim Comey for his role in the investigation that led to Trump's impeachment. And more Republicans are feeling the wrath of Trump as his paths to overturning the election have narrowed to none. The president retweeted a video of a Georgia elections official's plea for an end to a storm of death threats aimed at his office since the November 3rd election. In another incident, a former head of Department of Homeland Security's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, Christopher Krebs, was fired after his agency issued a statement saying there's no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. That's a direct contradiction to President Trump. One of Trump's election lawyers is Joe DiGenova. He called for retribution against Krebs after the fired official told a story on 60 Minutes.
Anybody who thinks that this election went well, like that idiot Krebs, who used to be the head of cybersecurity.
Oh, yeah, the guy that was on 60 Minutes last night.
That guy is a class A moron. He should be drawn and quartered, taken out of dawn and shot.
Trump lawyer Joe DiGenova. Afterwards, DiGenova backpedaled, saying it was obvious my comments were sarcastic and made in jest. Trump has used the excuse he was only being sarcastic at least half a dozen times during the last 4 years, notably after he suggested injecting bleach to cure the coronavirus. The death threats have been coming hot and heavy in Georgia, a red state turning blue for the first time in decades. A voting manager with the Georgia Secretary of State, Gabriel Sterling, made an impassioned plea to stop it.
It has all gone too far. All of it. Joe DiGenova today asked for Chris Krebs, a patriot who ran CISA, to be shot. A 20-something tech in Gwinnett County today has death threats and a noose put out saying he should be hung for treason because he was transferring a report on batches from an EMS to a county computer so he could read it. It has to stop. Mr. President, you have not condemned these actions or this language. Senators, you have not condemned this language or these actions. This has to stop. We need you to step up, and if you're going to take a position of leadership, show some.
Georgia Secretary of State official Gabriel Sterling. For his part, Krebs is not backing down in the face of threats. He's considering all his options.
It's certainly more dangerous language, more dangerous behavior. And the way I look at it is that we're a nation of laws, and I plan to take advantage of those laws. I've got an exceptional team of lawyers that win in court, and I think they're probably going to be busy.
You feel like there's legal action that might arise from comments like that?
We're taking a look at all our available opportunities. I'm not going to give them the benefit of knowing how I'm reacting to this. They can know that there are things coming, though.
Former Department of Homeland Security official Christopher Krebs. Meanwhile, President Trump, in an at times barely coherent 46-minute rant from the White House yesterday, reiterated his false claims the election in Wisconsin was stolen by a dump of fraudulent ballots.
I went from leading by a lot to losing by a little. And that's right here. That's at 3:42 in the morning. That's Wisconsin. A terrible thing. Terrible, terrible thing. But we will have far more, many times more, than the 20,000 votes needed to overturn the state. If we are right about the fraud, Joe Biden can't be president.
The president also doubled down on the debunked and farcical conspiracy theory that a voting machine company was fronting for the Venezuelan government in a plot to deny Trump re-election.
We have a company that's very suspect. Its name is Dominion. With the turn of a dial or the change of a chip, you can press a button for Trump and the vote goes to Biden. What kind of a system is this?
And in a rare moment of lucidity, Trump admitted being president has made his life a living hell.
Even what I'm saying now will be demeaned and disparaged, but that's okay. I just keep on going forward because I'm representing 74 million people. And in fact, I'm also representing all of the people that didn't vote for me. The mail-in voting scam is the latest part of their four-year effort to overturn the results of the 2016 election. And it's been like living in hell.
President Donald Trump speaking today in the White House. And coronavirus infections in New York City are continuing to climb to worrisome levels not seen in months as health experts warn about a difficult winter ahead. Mayor Bill de Blasio on Thursday said the city's seven-day average positivity rate had risen to 5.2%, the highest it's been in 6 months. But Governor Cuomo, in a surprise briefing today, says there's a bright spot, a Christmas present from Pfizer Pharmaceuticals.
Who would I give a Christmas present to at this point? Let's not ask. This is a box of vaccines. It has to be ultra cold. When you receive the package, you have to replace the dry ice, and then you have to replace the dry ice every 5 days, okay? under the dry ice is the actual package that has the trays in it. The trays have the actual vials in it. A vial, by the way, the vials are made glass from Corning Glass, another great New York company. A vial contains enough for five dosages. The vial comes with a diluting liquid, and the actual vial gets diluted before the vaccination actually happens. One tray, they call this a tray, one tray can hold up to 195 vials. Each vial, this is a vial, can do five dosages. The package itself can hold five trays. So roughly 5,000 dosages could be in this one box. And that's one dosage. Second dosage is 21 days later. And the person is not, the vaccine really isn't effective until after the second dosage. So it's not easy, but it's real. And they're being manufactured and they're going to be shipped. And we're very proud of Pfizer and we're proud of Corning. And we are working very hard to be ready for the distribution and training people on the distribution to make sure it's all done correctly. But this is the weapon that is going to win the war. And that is the light at the end of the tunnel, right?
Cuomo said Wednesday that New York expects enough Pfizer doses by December 15th to vaccinate 170,000 people, assuming the process continues at its current pace, and about 40,000 initial allocations from Moderna this month. The governor also says he's supporting a compromise bill in Congress to send nearly $1 trillion to states suffering under the financial blow of the pandemic. He called it a down payment.
I agree that as governor of New York, that we need help desperately, and something is better than nothing. And as a first down payment, I urge them to get something done before they leave for Christmas. Families will not have a holiday if they don't act and if there isn't some aid. Senator, President-elect Biden, also urge them to get something done. Senator Manchin, who I have great respect for, by the way, says that he believes this is the best they can get done. Again, it's a first down payment. It doesn't come near to the need. It would be a short-term bill until March. And I would urge them to get this first down payment bill passed before they leave, just so families have funding for the holiday season and it takes some pressure off state and local governments. They would then have to come back and do a real bill next year.
The governor had some good words for renters, $60 million in unspent rental assistance money, making it easier for more renters to apply for help.
The legislature passed a rent assistance bill. The rent assistance bill appropriated $100 million, up to $100 million, but had eligibility requirements on what income levels could qualify. We ran the program. The number of eligible applicants only brought us to $40 million in rental aid by the parameters of the law. By executive order, I'm going to change the law. I've spoken to the legislative leaders about this. Reopen the application window. extend the eligibility requirements to help more New Yorkers.
And the governor says he realizes that racial disparity is a key to the distribution of the vaccine, and that was on his mind as well. He says the federal government isn't providing enough to help get the drug to poor New Yorkers.
The distribution is a massive undertaking by government. I've said a number of times it has to be fair, it has to be equitable. The state has to have funding to do it. We have to be able to get the black and brown communities and poor communities. Blacks died at twice the rate that whites died. Browns died at 1.5 times the rate that whites died. They've had less COVID testing. They have higher infection rates. There is no justification not to have a very aggressive outreach program for the black and brown community. But government is going to have to do its part.
Many New Yorkers are resistant to vaccines, and to be effective, 75% of the state's population will have to be vaccinated, while polls show that only 50% say they would get the shot.
50% of the population roughly saying they're not going to take the vaccine. Mathematically, that doesn't work. You can't get to 75% if 50% say they aren't going to take it. But this is here and now. This vaccine distribution is going to happen in the next couple of weeks. New York State is going to be very aggressive about the distribution. I believe there's a great advantage to the state that most effectively vaccinates all people. And we'll be reaching out and educating people in the state. I would never ask anyone in the state to take a vaccine that I was unwilling to take myself. That's always been my standard. I'm not asking you to send your child to school if I wouldn't send my child to school. I'm not asking you to put yourself in a situation that I wouldn't put myself, and I won't ask New Yorkers to take a vaccine that I wouldn't take myself. But it is real, and we need people to start to focus on it because we want to get it done very quickly, and I want New Yorkers to start to think about it seriously. We're not going to get to the general population for a while, but you will start with not-for-profit nursing home distribution. So you'll have parents asking their family, what do you think? Should I take it or not? You'll have health care staff having to decide whether or not they take it. And people should start focusing on it because it's real and it's here. And again, New York wants to do it as quickly as we can.
Governor Andrew Cuomo earlier today. And in more local news, more than 200 men at the Lucerne Hotel on the Upper West Side will be allowed to stay at the controversial homeless shelter pending appeal of a lower court decision. State Appellate Division Judge Anil Singh made the decision late today. Last week, a lower court judge sided with the city, allowing the relocation of hundreds of homeless men from the Upper West Side to Lower Manhattan to move forward. For months, the city had been trying to move the men out of the Upper West Side after some residents complained of quality of life issues. Men from the Lucerne and residents from Lower Manhattan sued to try and stop the relocation. Mayor Bill de Blasio had planned to move the men to a Radisson Hotel on William Street downtown. Michael Hiller, the attorney for the homeless men, said had the court denied the motion today, it would have signaled a dramatic and, I think, draconian change in homeless policy in the city of New York. The decision Thursday comes after months of back-and-forth debate and acrimony over the men's fate. For weeks, officials and residents protested the move outside of the Lucerne, while residents of the Upper West Side threatened to sue if the city didn't move them. The appeals court decision will likely only prolong the controversy, perhaps taking it into 2021. In a statement, a city law department spokesperson said the city has a moral and legal obligation to provide safe shelter to all who need it. The temporary stay has delayed a move which we believe is in the best interest of the men residing at the Lucerne and a justified use of the mayor's emergency powers, but we're confident of prevailing when the court thoroughly reviews the matter. And finally, a high-ranking Long Island Railroad employee got paid overtime while going out bowling numerous times on Long Island. Another MTA worker collected thousands of dollars in overtime while enjoying concerts in Atlantic City and a resort vacation in Virginia. The allegations come in a new batch of federal indictments against five current and former senior MTA employees for, quote, brazen repeated fraud, allowing them to rack up in a, quote, extraordinary, almost physically impossible amount of overtime. That's according to the U.S. attorney. The governor spoke about it today. He said, I think there are bad apples in every line of work. You have a multiple thousand workforce. You're going to have people who take advantage of the system. And that's some of the news for Thursday, December 3rd, 2020. The news is produced with Linda Perry, and our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City for the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening, and have a great evening.